Ancient Warfare, The Battle of Marathon, Through Four Historians' Eyes, Part 2, Persian Cavalry. Now, there are two points that Herodotus discusses that we will look at. The first one is, with the Spartans on the way, why would the Greeks risk advancing into the open plain of Marathon before these allies arrived? The second, Herodotus says that the Persians had horse transports in 491 BC, and that at the start of the 490 BC campaign, they were loaded on the ships. The Persians then landed at Marathon because it was in the region of Attica most suitable for cavalry, as well as the closest to Eretia. But the cavalry then disappears from his account. Now, I want to talk a little bit about horses here. The idea that you're going to have a horse transport, that you're going to have a ship, and you're just going to easily load the horses on and easily unload them is fantasy. Even in the Middle Ages, the most difficult thing you could do was to move the horses. For example, when Edward III brings his army into France for the Hundred Years' War, I mean, the amount of space that they take up and the number of horses you can put on is pretty insignificant. So don't ever get the idea, and you talk about putting horses on a ship and removing them and unloading them, that this is not going to be a very long, drawn-out process. And if you're talking about thousands of horses, this could take days to do that, and it's not quick. So that's something else you want to always think about in the back of your mind while we're dealing with all of this stuff. So at any rate, if there were horses, where were they during the Battle of Marathon? Now, if you go and look at when back on one of the podcasts I did on Persian tactics, they used the two or three rows of spearmen. Then there behind them, you have all of the bowmen. And then you have your light troops and your cavalry on the flanks. And the idea was you'd slow the enemy down, and the horses would then come in and deal the final blow. So, quite frankly, the cavalry is what the Persians used to really hit their enemy after they were disorganized by the bowman attack. It wasn't as if, you know, you fired your bows and then got close and then moved forward. That was not the point. The spearmen are actually there just to protect the bowmen. So the horses are very crucial to standard Persian tactics. So going back to the last podcast on the Battle of Marathon, the conclusion that the two armies met at the site of the trophy makes two questions all the more pressing, because it means the Greeks advanced across the widest part of the plain of Marathon. The Persian camp was located to maximize the use of their cavalry. The Greeks advanced exactly where the Persians wanted to fight, where their superior cavalry could take advantage of the open space. Why would the Greeks take such a risk? Now, both historians Billows and Lacy concluded that they didn't. They followed a German historian of the mid-1800s, Ernst Curtius, idea that was popularized in an article in 1899 by Oxford historian J.A.R. Monroe. And that was that the Persians decided to make a dash by sea to Athens, and so re-embarked some of their forces, including their cavalry. But there's no evidence whatsoever to support that idea. Billows suggests that the Persian ships set out at dawn and reached Athens 12 hours later. So the Greeks seized the opportunity to fight on more even terms. They won the Battle of Marathon and then returned to Athens as fast as they could, supposedly in 7 hours, arriving in time before the Persian fleet arrived. Now, Lacy believes that some cavalry was present at the battle because the Persians hadn't finished reloading all the horses when the fighting broke out, so they fought only on the beach. Now, let's look at Billow's suggestions. We've already run across the open field. We've engaged in combat. We've fought. We've won. And we're going to march 26 miles in 7 hours back to Athens. The other issue is it doesn't take 12 hours to sail around the Attic Peninsula to get over to where Athens is. And it's a little bit Kind of a little bit strange there. Now, Herodotus does say, while the Persians were sailing around Soyunion, which is where the temple of Poseidon is located, the Athenians were marching back as fast as they could to defend the city, and they arrived in advance of the barbarian fleet. Now, there is a frieze from the Athena Nike temple and a Roman sarcophagus from Brescia that both depict a vicious fight near the Persian ships, and the cavalry are clearly present. Now, my view is loading and unloading the horse is, as I said before, is a very slow and very tedious job, which really needs light and calm sea. You just can't do it under any circumstance. Cavalry and part of the Persian army, if they were on the ship, may have still been on the ship, and they hadn't completed landing them. So the Greeks attacked knowing that they would not only have better odds, but very little cavalry to deal with because they've been watching them unloading their army. In addition, the Persians needed a strong camp to cover the cavalry unloading, which would have taken time. And then the Persian ships sailing to Athens could have simply been the troops that had never disembarked, so they wouldn't have left until after the Battle of Marathon was over. Why take a chance of your troops being undermanned until you were sure that there wasn't any hope? So it's like, all right, we've lost this battle. We've got some people on the ships. Let's go ahead and see if we can sail to Athens and still get an advantage. Now, Krentz, he says, there are issues with the art examples. For example, the Roman sarcophagus shows one horse and one ship, and is actually more like the mythological story of the death of Asclepius's brother, Kygeros. As far as the Nike temple frieze, that shows more horses, but it shows no ships. Now, Pausanias saw the lost painting that the frieze was made from, and it also did not show any horses. There are no sources that say the Persians reloaded their horses. There is an old Byzantine encyclopedia called the Suda, which was written 1,500 years after the Battle of Marathon. And it does talk about cavalry, but it's also considered an absolutely horrible source by most historians. So, if the Persian horses were not on the ships, where were they? Well, thirsty horses need water. In the summer of 490 BC, the local streams were dry. The marshy lake to the northeast was actually open to the sea. You can actually land ships in there, but that made the water too salty. So the main water source is the spring of Macaria at the northeast corner of the marsh lake. Now, I have put up on History According to Bob Facebook page a topographical map showing where all these places are. So if you'd like to go and see that, do that. Now, this is noted by Pausanias. Today, that marsh no longer exists. It's been drained. Now, just below the spring was a road that once connected the main plain of Marathon to the smaller plain of Trachonitis, which was north of the marsh and next to the spring. That area would have been an excellent location for a cavalry camp. The topography offers a possible answer why the Greeks dared to cross the plain of Marathon, where and why, and why they did. Number one, they'd been watching the Persians deploy for several days. The Persians began every day, they were a little sloppier in the way they ran their camps. Remember, this army is not the first-rate army. There's no immortals. These are recruits, and so this is not the specialty forces that you would normally find in the Persian army, not like what Xerxes brought with him in the next war. Of course, they probably knew that the Spartans were sending troops as well. So, you know, if the Persians don't know, the Greeks certainly do at this particular point. Now, Krentz says that the narrow road separating the Persian cavalry from the plain of Marathon offered the Greeks the opportunity. If the Greeks advanced fast enough and got far enough before the Persians recognized what was happening, it would be too late for the Persian cavalry to intercept the Greek charge because the narrow road would bottle in the Persian cavalry. The road was only wide enough for the horses to travel in single file. So if the Persian army was on the shore, they could not reach the battle before the hand-to-hand combat began, and once that began, the battle is almost over. So that's some of the give and take on the horses. If they were there, they weren't in significant numbers. If they were there in significant numbers, they were in a position that they couldn't be utilized. And so it's really infantry versus infantry, which means that the Greeks have a overall advantage. Now, the sources for these is the same ones that, you know, we've been doing. It's the ones of these historians. It's Herodotus, The Persian Wars. R.A. Billows, Marathon, How One Battle Changed Western Civilization. It was written in 210. J. Lacy, The First Clash, The Miraculous Greek Victory at Marathon and Its Impact on Western Civilization. That was published in 2011. And Peter Krentz, The Battle of Marathon, published in 2010. And an article, How Did the Battle of Marathon Go Down? Ancient History Special Edition on the Battle of Marathon, 2011. And that article is also written by Krentz. So I hope you enjoyed that. And as always, don't forget to come by the website, SummaHistorica.com or HistoryAccordingToBob.com. Please feel free to subscribe. The opportunity to subscribe by so much per month. It really is an easy way to help us out as we do what we're doing. So thank you very much.